This is WGRE 91.5 FM, Greencastle, Indiana.
Good evening and welcome to Music for Life, music from DePauw. This week, we preview our upcoming jazz and orchestra concerts. We chat with students and faculty about everything from the first year experience to music composition. We introduce a new segment called Music That Moves Me. And we'd give you an inside look into the recording technologies of the Green Center for the Performing Arts. We also preview the upcoming DePauw Palooza 2, the annual coming together of the College of Liberal Arts and School of Music on the lawn of Bowman Park. There are lots of exciting things happening in the School of Music this week, and we're glad you could join us for Music for Life.
On Friday, September 21st, from 5:30 to 6:30 on the lawn of Bowman Park, right outside of the GCPA, comes the second annual DePauwPalooza. And DePauwPalooza is an opportunity for the School of Music and the College of Liberal Arts to come together as every major ensemble and several other groups perform on the lawn as our way of kicking off the school year and inviting folks from the College of Liberal Arts to come hear what we do and get a sampling of the great concerts that are coming up in the GCPA. And joining me to talk about this is Allison Sherrick and Jennifer Peacock, two School of Music students, but also a history major from the College of Liberal Arts, Rachel Downbaugh. So Jennifer and Allison and Rachel, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You all performed in DePauwPalooza last year.
Yes.
So maybe we should explain to our audience exactly what happened.
So each ensemble, I guess, took turns playing two or three songs.
What groups did you play in?
I was in jazz band and choir, and then there was also a really fun drum circle that everybody was involved in.
So. Uh-huh. And how about you, Allison?
I was involved in the band and also the drum circle.
And Rachel?
I was just in the orchestra, so right. We went out and played first.
Right, so the orchestra opens the show. So on one corner of Bowman Park, the orchestra opened up and they played a tune or two.
Yeah, I think we played three pieces.
Three pieces, yeah. Okay, so we played, so the orchestra opened up, and then as soon as the orchestra finished, on the opposite end of Bowman Park, the choir?
I think it was the choir.
Yeah, the choir sang. Mm-hmm. And then while the choir was singing, the band was moving into the orchestra seating, and then the band played, and then it went back to jazz band, I think.
I think we
jazz
set up band. Where the choir
right.
had been.
Yeah, so the jazz band set up where the choir was, and then we had the musical group came
from
the musical last year. Yeah. They came and sang, and in the drum circle. So we should tell people, what is this drum circle? How's that work?
I was in Dr. Edberg's first year seminar, which is like understanding music more, and we focused on drum circles and like the music for all aspect of music and how we can spread music to other people outside of our of just the School of Music, and that was just a way to get the College of Liberal Arts students to kind of join us and see that everybody can be a beat. Yeah.
That's cool. So College of Liberal Arts students, non-music musicians had all walked up, joined in the drum. Oh, I remember that too. And then everyone started leading the drum circle in different ways and it was going on for quite a while. Yeah, that was quite an event. How was it for the orchestra playing outside?
It was a little interesting. It was definitely conditions I had never played in, but it actually turned out just fine. People said they could hear us, and we had no problem staying together or anything, which are all the problems we thought we were going to have.
Right.
So I think it definitely depended. We played a piece that was easy ensemble-wise, and it ended up working out really well.
Right. It's a totally different experience when you play outside because you get no reverberation.
Yeah.
You know, there's no walls to give you the sound back. It's
exactly.
Very unnerving when you first start, and then it becomes more tenable as you work your way through it. We're not certain exactly how many people came to DePauwPalooza last year, but we know that we ate 800 people's worth of pizza.
Wow.
So we had enough pizza to feed 800, and we ran out. So we assume we had 800 people, but there might have been more or fewer. Depends on how hungry everyone was, I guess. But we certainly hope to see that crowd grow this year. It's on September 21st from 5:30 to 6:30. We're also doing something new this year. We're sharing Bowman Park with a group that is raising funds for St. Jude's Children's Hospital. So DePauwPalooza will be a chance to come out, have a great time, hear some music, get some free pizza, and then go over and support St. Jude's Children's Hospital with a group from campus here called Up All Night. So this is another way that the School of Music and the College of Liberal Arts come together and now joining in with a fundraising group. And we think it's going to be a very exciting time. September 21st, 5:30 to 6:30, right after ensembles let out and before the weekend kicks off, come out and have a little pizza. And thank you for coming in to chat about it.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks. We'd like to welcome new members of the School of Music here on Music for Life. And joining me now is our new public relations and media person, Suzanne Hassler. Welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
We're very fortunate to convince you to join us. We snagged you away from your work in Illinois. Tell us a bit about that.
I was previously the coordinator for alumni relations and development at the University of Illinois School of Music, and prior to that, communications director for the Butler School of Music at Austin, Texas. And the listing for the opening here was forwarded to me, coincidentally, and it was in an area that I was really wanting to focus on. And I hopped in the car and drove my portfolio over to the dean.
Right. Now, this was really how to get a job. So for all of you out there who are looking at it, rather than send an email or to make a phone call, she got in her car and drove about an hour to reach us. And dropped off a very impressive portfolio, and the team met her, and we were able to bring her here. So that's how to get a job. That's the very impressive. So how's it been for you? I mean, you've been here all of
Wonderful.
What, 2 weeks? Three?
Yeah,
how long has it
going
been?
Going on three. Going I think it's three? My second full week. I arrived about 2 days before the freshman class right. did, so I feel a special affinity for them.
There you go. And yes, I'm a sophomore yeah. now myself, so I'll continue to look down upon you as a mere freshman. That's what we all do. And then we dropped a Steinway on your head, it kind of feels like, I'm sure, because there was just so much stuff to do. How are you doing?
I'm still vertical.
Yes, there you go. That's always a good
sign. I'm still speaking in complete sentences, where I'm attacking the to-do list with vigor and feel like I'm getting into a kind of a regular routine. And I have to say that extraordinary thanks to everyone that has been incredibly kind and supportive to me and helping me feel at home here.
Yeah, and a lot of the work you've been doing all right off the bat, just kind of hitting the ground running, has been over the concert series.
Yes, the new guest artist series, yeah. which is very exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and new posters coming out about project. And Suzanne is already very engaged in the community and talking to press outlets for us and organizing ad campaigns and public relations types of things. And new press releases are coming out by the moment, it seems. So we're certainly keeping her busy. And we're glad you could join us to chat for a moment. For anyone in the community that would like to talk to Suzanne, you can find her on our website. And I'm sure she'd be happy to chat with you about other ways to spread good news about the School of Music. And we're happy that you've joined us at DePaul.
Thank you very much. And while I have the opportunity, thank you also for the large screen computer.
Yes, which is full of PR materials. You've got it. Well, thanks for joining us here on Music for Life. And we're glad you're with us at DePaul.
Thank you.
I'm welcoming back to the studio Jim Beckel. Thanks for coming back.
Oh, thank you, Mark. Good to be here.
In addition to your illustrious career as a trombonist, you've also been a composer for quite some time. How long have you been at this?
Actually, I've composed from the beginning of my studies. Early on when I was studying piano, I can remember improvising at the keyboard and my mother from the kitchen saying, go back to
that's not how it goes.
Practice what you were assigned. Don't play around on the piano.
That was my piano teacher telling me, what are you making this stuff up for?
But I just loved to sit at the piano and just, you know, realize these things I was hearing in my head. And even in high school, I had entered a North Texas State jazz band, big band competition, a national one, and won that, and had been going to, at the time they had these wonderful Stan Kenton clinics and had been studying film.
Wow.
So, and I studied for a week with Oliver Nelson.
Really?
Where we had
Boy.
To write a big band chart in 4 days, copy it for Friday morning to be read.
Oh my gosh.
So
wow.
No sleep that week.
You can't do much better than Oliver Nelson when it comes to big band sound.
Oh, it's fun. I'll always remember the first day of the class. You know, he was in a big classroom. He walked in. He played, I think it was a C sharp 9 chord, which, mm-hmm. of course, has the major third and the minor third and the sharp 9 an octave above. And it's a very unique, cool blues chord. But you know, just off the top of his head, he played that on the keyboard and said, anyone who does not know what this chord is should leave the room now because you're not ready for this class. I think most of us at the time in high school didn't know what that was, but no one left the room. But yeah, it was really fantastic.
Yeah, his higher number stuff is such lush music. You probably remember that Linda Ronstadt album that they recorded together, Lush Life. And what a great title tune and how appropriate a title for his lush scoring. What a brilliant man.
It was an honor to get to meet him and study with him for a very short period of time, of course, but still very cool.
But very early on. And then you continued on throughout your collegiate career and
in
your professional world.
I did, and I got into the Indianapolis Symphony, and we were doing all of these school concerts where we go around to every high school. And, you know, of course, I went to the management and said, you know, it'd be great if you'd let me write something and we could. My composition started in the jazz arena, or I wrote a kind of a jazz suite for the orchestra, and we took that around to all the school concerts. Somehow lots of trombone solos ended up.
I can't imagine how that's possible.
I got smarter as time went on. And I remember playing it on some schools thinking, why did I write this part so hard? but so that's where it started. And then over time, I had a greater interest in getting to more of a classical subscription type scenario in my composition.
And how many works do you number them? I know you've got a huge catalog.
I don't know. I've not sat down and counted them, so I would have to go back and do that. It is starting to add up. I remember what a librarian, Mike Runyon, said to me once. He said, the beauty of a composer is if you keep copyright to all of your work and you live long enough, over time, you build a catalog and it's accumulative. So,
yeah.
and that certainly has come to be the case. I wrote a Christmas fanfare back in 1992 for our Yuletide concerts. And you know, now I get, 20-40 performances of that every Christmas.
Wow.
And you tack that on with all the other pieces you write. And of course, you write some pieces that never see the light of day again. And then every now and then you get lucky and you write something that really catches on. Liberty for All is a patriotic work that, again, through the ISO I wrote, and that has been played by maybe 70 different orchestras around the country, broadcast, played by the Boston Pops twice. But the point is there's accumulation there of work. Someone asked me just the other day, how is it you have so many pieces, you know, written? I said, well, I've just lived long enough to write these many pieces.
So if you had a piece of advice that you were going to give to a young Jim Beckel or to a young composition student, you know, what would you tell them?
I would tell anybody in any career pursuit, including composition, to not be discouraged by the slammed door, the no.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of people out there in the world that will give you negative feedback. And I think critical feedback is good. That's how we learn. But you can't let it discourage you. You have to believe in yourself, mm-hmm. and you have to learn from your mistakes. Every composition I write, I keep a list of, okay, never do that again.
Yeah. Right.
That totally didn't work.
Right.
And hey, this really did work, so I should remember that, or this orchestration or whatever, this architecture of the piece or whatever. Try to remember what works and repeat it and learn from your mistakes and don't repeat it. And just don't let yourself be discouraged. That's a battle in life, isn't it?
Right.
Keep a positive attitude about yourself and keep going and believe in yourself. And it's the people that don't give up that win.
Right, exactly. You know, and another, there's a speaking of the jazz idiom, there's a great story about Miles Davis being hired to replace Dizzy Gillespie in a band with Charlie Parker.
Uh-huh.
And Miles is just a kid and he's scared to death to do this. And he goes in and he tells this story himself that he's in there and he's just stinking up the place trying to play like Dizzy Gillespie. And Dizzy walks in. And Dizzy, who had just been fired, he sits down at the bar and he listens to a little of this. And at the break, Miles is just scared to death. And and Dizzy walks up to him and says, just play what you know. You know, don't play like me.
Isn't
play like
that
you.
Cool?
Play like you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the pieces of advice I always gave to composition students, and one that my composition teacher gave to me, was be you.
Yeah.
You've got a voice, so be you. You know, write what you know.
Right.
You know, and I think that's really part of the. So many times, I think young composers these days try to sound like someone else, and that's a good way to start because emulation is a great way to begin. But in the end, you want to be you. And I think the thing that's made your work so successful over time is you've really developed your voice, mm-hmm. and you are very good at being you. And we're lucky to have you here at DePaul.
Oh, well, thank you. I must say I've had the advantage of sitting in a major symphony orchestra. You hear these incredible works by the masters,
right.
And then you get to go to the library, get to score, say, wow,
how did they do that?
What did how did Respighi voice that in the violas?
Right, exactly.
So good. I just have to tell a great story. Also in similar vein, I think that's so wonderful that Dizzy was supportive of Miles. Mm-hmm. What a tribute to Dizzy that is. I remember I had sent something off to the Boston Pops Orchestra years and years and years earlier, and 10 years go by, and I get this return of the music and a letter saying, you know, we reviewed this work, and we just don't really see where this would fit into the program. So we're returning it. And by the way, in the future, please do not send us any more of your materials. Don't call us. We're not calling you. And, you know, I'm thinking, it was kind of a downer. This is honest to God the truth. It wasn't but a month later that I get home from an orchestra rehearsal, and there's a note on my door from my wife saying, you know, the Boston Pops called and they want to do Liberty for All next month and that you need to get back in touch with them. So I think that sums up life, doesn't
right.
it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So never say die, never give up. I believe in yourself. I think words to live by.
Great advice. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Mark. Take care.
On Saturday, September 22nd at 7:30, we will have our first jazz ensemble concert of the semester. A few weeks ago, we introduced you to Dan Foster, our new jazz ensemble director, and I've invited him back to the studio this week to chat about this upcoming concert. Welcome back, Dan.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
So tell me a bit about what you're playing here. I hear from the students, they're fired up. They think this is a great program and they're going at it. So tell me what it's about.
Well, I'm all about trying to get a good mix of styles and charts from different bands. We're going to look at some bassy tunes. One of those would be Sammy Nestico's The Queen Bee.
Ah.
Real nice, relaxed
swing. Sure is. Nice swing. Beat.
Then we're also going to do a Buddy Rich tune, You Gotta Try. Nice up-tempo swing.
Oh, yeah. That's one end of the world to the other, right there.
Definitely. And going back to the slower side, we'll do Neil Hefti's Girl Talk.
Really nice, relaxed. What a great arrangement. That's a great chart.
We're also going to throw in a little bit of a funk with a Thad Jones composition, Us.
Ah, very cool.
Has a really nice horn tootie mm-hmm. in it.
As do almost all Thad Jones charts. I mean, boy, he knows how to write.
Definitely. Real nice thick voicings
yes,
in there.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
We're also going to look at a Stan Kenton chart in 5-4, one of Hank Levy's
right.
Decoupage.
Decoupage. Oh, that's a great chart. Nice trombone thing there.
Definitely.
Very cool. You know, that's a wide variety of program, and that's part of what I love about coming to the jazz ensemble. Even though when you compare us to classical music, jazz ensemble literature is from a significantly smaller period of time, there's still an amazing array of music in there. You've got that laid-back, bassy swing thing that you get with Neil Hefti, mm-hmm. all the way up to this 5-4 figure in the decoupage. Those things are radically different. And Thad Jones, there's no voice like him. You play Thad Jones, that's...
Yep.
So how are the students adjusting to all of these? I mean, because really this is like six different major things happening at the same time, plus all the other charts you'll end up playing that night. So how are they doing?
They're doing really well with it. I think we have a great bunch of students here at DePaul, and they're very receptive to the ideas that I'm presenting on how to practice all this music.
So how do they get their heads around such stylistic changes? So oftentimes, you know, you're playing something in a classical vein or a romantic vein or a Baroque vein, and it's the same period practice idea. Mm-hmm. But here, in a single rehearsal, you're going to jump through all kinds of things. How do they get their heads around the difference between Count Basie and Thad Jones?
Well, with any style of music, the key is... if you can hear it, you can play it.
Right.
So I like to emphasize listening to mm-hmm. recording as much as possible. Almost, it's more important to listen than it is to sit in a practice room trying to hammer it away.
Yeah, so, that's true. In a lot of cases with jazz, that's the case.
Mm-hmm. I've been able to get all my students the reference recordings of the actual bands that I mentioned playing the charts.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been wrapping their heads around that, so to speak.
Yeah, and you know, if you can literally wrap your head around that or wrap it around your head, you know, you put those headphones on and you've got that playing, mm-hmm. you begin to absorb that sound and that style, because every one of those guys, or almost every one of them, were band leaders as well as composers. their attitude comes out in their music, like that Buddy Rich chart. If you don't know, Buddy Rich was not the happiest man in the world, not the nicest or most polite man.
His public face isn't now.
Yeah.
But in talking with Bobby Shue, I studied with him, mm-hmm. and he had nothing but nice things to say about Buddy Rich, actually.
Yeah, so it's funny. I think Buddy Rich had a big heart, and he did good things. Mm-hmm. I remember playing with Conrad Herwig, who was the lead trombone player for him for a while, and I said, so what was it like to play with Buddy Rich? And he chuckled and said, nobody plays with Buddy Rich. You just play against him.
Yeah.
But he was so aggressive as a drummer, and he was so much into making that band perfect.
Mm-hmm.
He really worked them hard to get that sound. Oh, and his band still continues.
Right.
Was it you that told me his daughter sings with them now?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's on that one recording, The Beat Goes On. That's what it was.
Oh, that's her?
Yeah. That's... on that old recording, yeah. of like the real young girl.
Yeah,
yeah, that's actually Kathy Rich.
Singing the Beat Goes On.
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. And interestingly, for our jazz ensemble, they will have just the day before played a lot of this stuff for the entire university in what we call DePauw-Palooza, which mm-hmm. is where all of the ensembles come out of the house here at GCPA. We go out onto the lawn, which is Bowman Park between us and the College of Liberal Arts, and we invite all the liberal arts students in to have some pizza and listen to us play. And you guys will get two shots at this music, because on Friday you'll be playing a lot of it for DePauw-Palooza, and then on Saturday we'll bring it indoors and play it
right.
in Kresge. So we've got an exciting program ahead, and I love this programming. I'm looking forward to some great charts. We're yeah. glad you're here and looking forward to great things.
Looking forward to showing our talents.
There you go. Well, thanks for coming in to chat.
Being bitten by a monkey is not as pleasant as noting that on Wednesday, September 19th, the School of Music's Guest Artist Series opens with Project Trio, a passionate, high-energy ensemble comprised of three classically trained performers from Brooklyn, New York, whose eclectic musical interests have been described by JazzReview.com as a glorious celebration of the music of our time. Tickets for the 7:30 p.m. performance are available at the box office in the Green Center for the Performing Arts. You can also purchase tickets online by visiting depauw.edu/music/tickets.
We got a lot of positive feedback about our segment a few episodes ago about the Rodrigo Guitar Concerto. And the staff discussed this and decided to start a new segment for Music for Life. And this segment is called Music That Moves Me. And the way this works is we choose someone, we ask them to pick a piece of music that really means something to them, and then we just give them the mic. Here's Carla Edwards on the music that moves her.
My name is Carla Edwards. Today I'm going to be talking about Maurice Duruflé's Prelude and Fugue on the Name of Alain, Opus 7. When Duruflé conceived of this piece, he had just lost one of his best friends in World War II, Jean Alain, who was a quite famous organist and composer. And in order to pay tribute to Alain, Duruflé composed this piece based on the notes of Alain's name, A-L-A-I-N. Now, if you know the musical alphabet, you would know that there are no L's in the musical alphabet and so on. So Duruflé wrapped the rest of the alphabet around the musical pitches, and he came up with the notes A, D, A, A, and F for the notes to represent Alain's name. From these notes, these five pitches, he conceived of a 12-minute piece that's absolutely one of the most stunning works in the whole of organ rep. The piece was written in 1943, and the prelude opens up with that theme in the right hand. It's very, very soft, and you'll hear a brief segment of the opening prelude. This theme progresses throughout the whole prelude. It's constant and driving. Even though it's soft, it's just ever present, as if Duruflé were trying to just over and over and over speak the name of Alain, and obviously his sadness over losing his friend. At the end of the prelude is a very soft segment where Duraflay stops the incessant driving of Alain's name, and we hear just brief, beautiful chords, and all of a sudden we hear the theme from Litanies, which is one of Alain's most famous pieces. At the end of the prelude, then, this is just a glorious, soft, quiet ending, and we think, okay, this is such a great tribute to Alain, but it's not the end. Following the prelude is a fugue where, again, Duraflay takes that five-note theme of Alain's name, and he starts to build a fugue with it. The opening of the fugue is very slow, very warm, very melancholy, and so we think, okay, well, this is again another quiet tribute. But a couple minutes into the fugue, you'll hear it start to go faster. We get a faster theme. This fugue is what's known as a double fugue, where it has actually two subjects in it. We have the opening subject that's Alain's name, and we have a second subject that comes in that's kind of fast. And from this point on, the piece just takes on a life of its own. We have the second fugue subject, which is fast and brilliant. And then out of everything, we start to hear Alain's name again, over and over and over as part of a fugue subject. The fugue starts to build, it gets louder and louder, until by the end of the piece, the organ is full. It's built up to as full and loud as you can make an organ go. And not only do we hear both fugue subjects at the same time, we hear Alain's name in canon and stretto between the upper voice and the pedal part. And pretty soon it's inverted and upside down and harmonized. And the piece just ends brilliantly with a wonderful short little pedal solo. It was obvious in his grief and in his mourning for his friend that he wanted to compose a piece that would represent that mourning and be something that would represent Alain and what his friendship meant. And he came up with this just glorious piece of music.
Thank you.
Students at DePauw have a remarkable range of opportunity while they're here, and it starts for them as freshmen, because we have a freshman experience, a first-year seminar, that happens throughout the university, both in the College of Liberal Arts and in the School of Music. And here to discuss their experiences in the first-year seminar are three brand-new students joining us from Wisconsin and Colorado and Indiana. We have with us today Zeno Carpenter-New. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we have Mo Bailey.
Thanks.
And we have Melissa Guerrero.
Thanks.
So welcome, guys. You are in the first year seminar, and each of you have a different main professor for this, correct?
Yes.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So Zeno, who's your professor?
Dr. Brockman.
So you have Dr. Brockman. Mo?
I have Dr. Edberg.
Dr. Edberg. And Melissa?
Dr. Edwards.
We have three different School of Music faculty members that are doing a first year experience. And then at some point you trade.
Right.
You actually spend a little time with each of them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What kinds of things you've been doing?
Well, Dr. Brockman's first year seminar is on Dalcroze Eurythmics. So mm-hmm. It's basically studying how movement and listening to music kind of works together. We've been doing a lot of like walking to rhythms and mm-hmm. then walking as you would play the rhythm or sing the rhythm, depending mm-hmm. on what you do. And then yesterday, actually, we had three students sing, and the class will eventually have to play or sing their instrument. And she takes you through kind of her like method for 20 minutes of basically just expressing your song through a different way, through like the way you move, through the way you walk. And it's amazing.
It's amazing how it opens it up. We had a student on last semester on Music for Life talking about this course and how it really changes the way that you approach performance.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
Yeah, and you too will have the opportunity to do this when you trade professors. But Mo, what are you doing at this moment?
I would consider our class an improv crash course.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of what we do is improvisation, and it kind of is just a release and a relax from our everyday stressful mm-hmm. lives. The way Edberg described it, he said we're constantly in student crisis mode. We are put in there because that's how we grow. Mm-hmm. And so this improv class is a place to really break down and realize that music isn't always about tense and like too much focus. You got to relax sometimes and let the music come naturally.
Right.
And so
you're
really
a French
cool.
horn player, right? And
yep.
French horn players
don't
normally don't think French horn don't.
But it's really cool.
French
and
horn players don't improvise. But
absolutely.
Here you guys get the chance to improvise mm-hmm. because Professor Edberg does this very cool thing for improvisation for mm-hmm. classical musicians. And,
yeah.
and it's a great opportunity. And as a freshman, he starts out giving you this opportunity to
play drums,
it.
Too. Right. That's what and we to do play mostly, drums, which right. is fun.
And to give you a chance kind of as a stress relief. And I love that, and here's why. Because in the jazz world, improvisation is often fraught with peril. You know, it's, oh my gosh, this scale, it has to be exactly this, and it has
yep.
to be that.
Yeah.
The pressure is on. Whereas if you come to improv in a very relaxed way, such as this, you move into deeper levels of improvisation
yeah.
quickly, I think. And so what about you, Melissa? What are you doing with Dr. Edwards?
I'm in understanding music, so we're just looking at, right now we're looking at just simple forms, like binary forms and phrase forms, and just understanding how they work, how they're made, like the structure. And that's actually been helping out a lot in just listening and recitals.
Mm-hmm.
Like the last one we were in, we were like, oh, hey, look, they had a binary form, and we were just looking at that.
Yeah, isn't it interesting how the way we perceive music changes when we understand it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I love that understanding music, because that's really what that's about, is this opportunity to understand music at a deeper level. Of course, we all love to put on music and kind of zone out to it. And that's terrific. That has
yeah.
a very powerful, powerful impact on us all. But we also gain something when we understand exactly how that music is put together and what they're working on there. And so after a little while, all of you will trade professors, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Next week.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. Yep. Next week we trade.
So, yeah, that's really cool. I mean, it's like your class continues, the professors just switch.
Right.
And the emphases that you take on will change with the professor change.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be an opportunity for all of you to experience what you've heard from the other folks in freshman seminar.
Right.
And there are three sections in the School of Music. There are three sections of freshman seminar. And so our entire freshman class is divided between these three seminars. Do you guys share information between seminars? Do you say, hey, here's what I did in mine. What did you do in yours?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talk a lot. We're all friends.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's fun to just discuss and kind of share information with each other.
Coming together?
I suppose, yeah.
You know, we've done some things together. We had dinner together the
yeah.
first
yeah.
week,
yeah.
almost the first night you were here. And we've had the opportunity to come together as a freshman class in many different ways. And I think part of that, the excitement for me of the fall semester on a college campus is the freshman class
mm-hmm.
because here come all of these folks from all of these different places, and they're all these disparate things. And then in a matter of just a few days, no, they're not. They're one thing. Yeah. They're the freshman class. So had you expected anything like this first year seminar?
No.
It's kind of unusual.
Yeah.
I expected it to be a lot of writing, I'm going to be honest. And hearing from my other friends who are in CLA ones, it is a lot of writing. They write tons of essays. And we're doing a lot of blogging in ours. Like every week we have to write kind of essay blogs. But it's a little informal, which I really like because it takes the stress out of that formal paper that you have to write.
Yeah.
And it's more about what do you really feel and what do you really think about everything.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
And the fact that you're really getting three courses in one course.
Yeah, that's awesome too.
You change. You know, the folks who've gone through the Dalcroze thing say, wow, that is such a life-changing thing. I perform so differently now that I've done that. Mm-hmm. The people who've gone through the improv thing say the very same thing. Wow, improv has so changed the way I view music. And then, of course, understanding music, once you understand it, you just can't hear it the same way again. So these are all real life-changing events, and they've happened from your very first moment on campus.
Absolutely.
So we're glad you're here. You're the future leaders of DePauw, and you're the future leaders of the musical world, so we expect you to get straight A's and do great work.
You got it.
Of course.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming in to chat about it.
Thank you.
This is Matt Champagne. I'm the producer of Music for Life, and for this week's 5-Minute iPod, our guest is College of Liberal Arts professor István Csicsery-Ronay. Did I pronounce that?
That's as good as anybody ever gets it.
I want to be better.
Well, it's István Csicsery-Ronay.
István Csicsery-Ronay.
Good, good, good.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you're an English professor.
Correct.
And your specialty?
Is science fiction.
You're not going to a desert island.
Mm.
You're going to be marooned on a planet.
Okay, this is cruel.
Let's say one of Larry Niven's planets from the known universe.
Okay.
Just to make it fun. But no one's there to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And your portable listening device is malfunctioning and it will only play 5 minutes.
Oh no. This is a cruel exercise.
It is. But you have the advantage of actually being able to pick which 5 minutes it will play.
Okay.
If you had to do that, what would you choose to be stuck with for a possibly infinite amount of time?
Mm. Well, fortunately, I didn't have to make this decision on the spot because then I just blow up right here. But I did choose, although I didn't realize it was going to be quite so dire a situation, I chose a Scarlatti harpsichord keyboard sonata that I particularly like, but I also chose it as a kind of a typical Scarlatti sonata.
What is it about this piece that is going to help you in this predicament?
Well, Scarlatti is a really special composer for me. I don't play keyboards. I've played other instruments, but I don't play keyboards. But I discovered Scarlatti kind of in my 20s. And what struck me, surprised me, was this kind of constant flow of creativity. And every one of his sonatas has the same thing. There's several things going on that are very surprising, but then he has hundreds of them, and you're in the presence of a constant, creative, graceful outflow. So it's almost like an experience of raw creativity.
Well, let's hear it then. Which sonata is this?
This is Kirkpatrick catalog number 547.
And it's played by Trevor Pinnock.
Let's hear it.
Thank you.
Joining me on the opposite side of the control room glass is our producer, Matt Champagne. Welcome.
Thank you, sir.
And it's good to have you on this side. Some folks might be surprised that we actually do this radio show in the Green Center for the Performing Arts itself. And they might be surprised that we have a rather large recording studio and the ability to record digitally from every performance space in our building. And so here to chat with me about it is Matt. So how long have you been here?
I finished my fifth year last spring.
And your official title, other than producer of Music for Life, which everyone knows you around the world as?
Recording arts specialist.
Recording arts specialist. And so you record every event. You see to it that every single event, which is like 175 events now.
Yes, it is. That can be a challenge.
Yeah, just managing the sheer number of events that goes on in a house our size is quite a challenge. Now, how do you do that? Do we set up recording equipment in each space every time we perform?
No, actually, we use a model called centralized recording. So we have a single recording space into which all of the microphones lead from the various performance halls.
So every event is recorded from central recording?
That's right.
I see. And so then we archive these recordings. They go back for years and years, including ones that we had back on the Deo cassette and DAT and reel-to-reel and everything else for years on end, correct? I mean, we're one of the first schools of music. This must go back a long way.
I only know about the last 5 years. Right. I only take responsibility for the last 5 years.
Okay, so you're responsible for the last 5 years, but it has been going on for quite a while.
Yeah, and there is the university archive has a holding of older recordings.
Right. Yeah, it's remarkable that we have, you know, the ability to know what Aaron Copland did when he was here and some of those folks. Wouldn't it have been wonderful if we'd have had recording technology here when Pablo Casals was here or
it would have
Rubenstein?
But the things that we do have in the archive are amazing. And I'm speaking main, not even musically, but just the guest speakers that we have. It's just an amazing treasure trove.
And the show itself is recorded in Studio B of the Green Center. We also have an A studio and a control room. So tell our listeners a little bit about this space and the use of it.
Sure. Well, this is the larger of the two recording spaces in the recording studio. It's a rather live room.
Mm-hmm. Although it's tunable. You can change the walls.
That's right. We have doors that we can open that will change the wall response from reflective or diffusive to absorptive.
We use this for many purposes. Students use it for recording, for graduate school auditions.
Yes, that's right. Yes, they do, when I can't convince them otherwise. For music, classical music sounds best in a hall, right? And so that's where I like to record auditions, because that's where we can give the students their best
sound
the best and ambience, let them put their best foot forward in their audition.
And you've spent some time this summer actually doing a professional recording for one of our faculty members, correct?
Yes, I did. And we used Thompson Recital Hall.
Right. We have such great live spaces, and they're so well mic'd, and the spaces are so warm. They're great performance opportunities. And probably weekly I get requests, people emailing, can we use the recording studio to do this or that. Could we record something live here or there? And I think as our reputation and the word about the quality of our spaces and the quality of our equipment and the quality of our recording engineer gets about, more and more people want to be involved in it. It's really remarkable for an undergraduate institution to have this type of technology available to them.
That's right. When we were first outfitted with equipment starting in 2007, going through 2008, we made a conscious decision to have fewer channels of recording, but to make them as high quality as possible.
Right.
We can make world-class stereo recordings, which is only fitting given the quality of our performing spaces.
Right, absolutely. And so this is an interesting event because our radio station here on campus is very well outfitted. It's a great space. I'm in there often, and I'm always amazed to see all the technology and the things they're capable of doing there. But it's so much easier for us at Music for Life to record this in the school itself, where our guests can come and visit us in Studio B. We can get it down and then rush it over just in time for the Sunday night performance, as is typically the case.
Sure. Well, yeah. Well, it's like recording in your living room.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a great luxury that we have.
It
and
sure
it's
is.
Really wonderful, and I think it helps keep guests a little more, at least the School of Music guests, a little more
at home.
At They're home.
Relaxed.
Relaxed.
Yeah,
is at least half of the battle.
Yeah, that is so true. So between Matt's good work in recording the show and then editing the show and putting it together, and Veronica Pedrell's work on getting it pushed to iTunes and to our website, and then WGRE's good efforts of producing it live and putting it on their live stream. There's all kinds of ways to catch our show each week. We're glad that you could join us, and thank you, Matt, for stopping in to chat with us.
You're very welcome.
On September 23rd at 3 p.m., we will have our first orchestra concert of the year in Kresge Auditorium. And here to chat about this particular concert is our conductor, Orsina Smith. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a very exciting time in the School of Music as the major ensembles roll out their first performances. And this year, the University Orchestra is tagging along to the university's 175th anniversary. So I decided that some of the music that might be fun for that is to put some music in play that was being written about that time as the university was being founded in 1837 and then 1838. So there's this wonderful French composer, Daniel Auber, who wrote an opera called Fra Diavolo, Brother a Devil, but it's a fun little overture to that opera, and the opera was quite successful. And it's very jaunty and has kind of Robin Hood-like themes in it, and so it's a great way to get the season started off, because as the university was being founded here in the United States, Europe was still developing its own musical projects, and so I just wanted to tie across to that. The second piece on the program is Johann Sebastian Bach. Now, you might think, well, you know, Bach wasn't from that particular time period. But the great composer Felix Mendelssohn had discovered the music of Johann Sebastian Bach, and in 1838, was bringing it back to the European population. So I've chosen four movements from the Bach orchestral suites to work our students through and have them understand the knowledge of that style as well. Thank you. third work on the program kind of ties into the overall topic, De Pas 175th and friends and acquaintances, but also the hijinks of students, in that this particular composer, Pietro Mascagni, was working on a project to turn in an opera by a deadline. There was a composition contest. And like a college student, he waited around until the last minute to get the project started, and then finally turned it in on the day it was due.
Now, of course, DePauw students never do this. This has never happened in the history of DePauw
students. Right, I think I've had one or two students in my class to tell me honestly that they waited until the last minute. And this became one of his most successful operas ever, Cavalleria Rusticana. There's a little intermezzo from that, a scene change where actually there's nothing going on stage. There are no characters, just a picture of a shop and a picture of a church, and the set is dimly lit, and this music, this absolutely exquisite music, is played to kind of summarize what the action of this one-act opera had been. So the intermezzo from Cavalleria Rusticana of Pietro Mascagni is played as the third piece on the program, certainly a good contrast to the other two. The final work on the program is by the great English composer Sir Edward Elgar, The Variations on an Original Theme. And this ties into the friends and acquaintances theme of the starting concert, our opening topic, that Elgar came home from teaching one day, and he was whistling a tune when he came in the door. And he sat down at the piano and started to improvise a little bit on that tune, and then he changed some things, did some different things. And his wife said from the kitchen, "You know, I really liked that little theme." And so he said, "Oh, okay." So he wrote then a theme plus 14 variations. And each of the variations are friends and acquaintances of his throughout his life. Some of the most unique would be the variation that he wrote, which is about his wife. Another one of a viola student that he used to have. So he wrote one of these variations focusing on the viola section. The favorite one is Nimrod, which is about his best friend, a person who supported him through thick and thin. And then the final one right before the big finale is very intriguing in that it has no title on it. All the others have the initials of his favorite friends, etc. But this one has no initials on it, and it's a beautiful romance. And people think, he never said, but they think it was about one of his first loves, and you can hear her going off into the distance on an ocean vessel because they have the sound of the thunder of the engines played underneath the theme by the timpani rolling using coins, metal coins to be played. So there's a lot of fascination with this piece, a lot of fascination with the concert. The University Orchestra is coming out of the chute for its first event, working on fundamentals as well as presenting a program that we think will be of interest to a lot of people.
And that concert will be on September the 23rd at 3 p.m. in Kresge Auditorium. You can get tickets online, you can get them at the box office, you can get them at the door, and we look forward to seeing you there. Thanks for coming in to chat about
Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Music for Life. We love hearing from listeners. You can contact us by emailing musicforlife@depauw.edu. Student producers of Music for Life are Bea Daggerford, Anna Gatdula, Adam Lumen, Frederico Poppy, and Matthew Skiba. Our online editor is Veronica Pedrell, and our show is produced and recorded by Matthew Champagne in the Judson and Joyce Green Center for the Performing Arts at DePauw University in Greencastle, Indiana. I'm Mark McCoy, Dean of the School of Music. Thanks for listening. Keep music in your life, and have a great week.
It's Music for Life.